Well, Jackie Road is just a place where we can have some fun. Well, I'm having fun at Jackie Road, doing cool interviews and writing songs.
Hey, it's Jack Post of the Jackie Road Studios podcast, the show where I sit down with an interesting guest and then I take something from our chat and use it to write and record an original song. You'll hear a brand new song at the end of this podcast with Mr. Andy Lee. It seemed only fitting interviewing Hamish in the previous episode that I interview Andy as well, and in that order as well, Hamish and Andy. Andy's been a total legend to me, as is Hamish. They've both been good. But Andy was particularly instrumental in me getting the job that I do now with Christian O'Connell on Gold 104.3. Of course, I still am part of the Hamish and Andy podcast every week. I should have mentioned in Hamish's episode as well, Hamish and Andy have a new podcast at the moment called The Remembering Project. Sadly, I'm not a part of it. They got bloody Mike sitting in my seat, that filthy dog. No, he's a good guy. Of course, people can hear Radio Mike's episode of this podcast. He was the very first guest in Jackie Road Studios way back when, in July or June even, when I started the show. Hamish and Andy's Remembering Project is anywhere you get good podcasts now. Of course, their regular podcast is up as well. And you can also get Andy's children's book if you've got a young person in your life. He's up to, I believe he's up to book number 5 of the Do Not Open This Book series, anywhere you get your good books. Remember to stay tuned right through the end of the episode to hear the brand new song. I literally just finished working on it before posting this, and I'm super proud of it. Thanks to my wife, Bianca, who helped me write this week's song. And as always, all songs from Jackie Road Studios will be available on all the streaming services, including the Spotify playlist I made especially for Jackie Road Studios. Just search Jack Post or Jackie Road Studios in your streaming service. Without further ado, this is Andy Lee. Again, I keep forgetting to make new intro music for the guests now that we don't do intro songs anymore that are copyrighted. So I'm just going to play this again. I promise by next episode, I will have some intro music.
Well, Jackie Road is just a place where we can have some fun. Well, I'm having fun at Jackie Road, doing cool interviews and writing songs.
Joining me in Jackie Road Studios today is Mr. Andy Lee. Andy, how are you?
Oh, it's nice to be finally welcomed in, Jack. Clear out the electric drum kit and get me into the studios, I think.
It's already packed up, man. It's already well and truly packed up.
Good.
Hey, I'll start with actually referencing the drum kit as a Hamish instrument. I'll start with a Hamish game. Hamish was okay. The last guest on Jackie Road Studios. We plan to record.
Improved.
Well and truly improved. We plan to record at midday. What time do you think we started recording?
Oh, when it comes to Hamish, I'm going to say, if you're lucky, 12:43.
It's about 12:35, so that's a pretty... Okay. He's done well then.
He has. That's ahead of schedule. That's absolutely ahead of schedule.
How much time, honestly, over the years, like how much time do you think... Because you're always on time. I've never been anywhere where you weren't on time. For this interview, bang, right on time. How much time do you reckon you've spent like waiting that 10 or 15 minutes for Hamish to arrive to something in all the years you've done things together?
Wow, jeepers. It's a really good question. I don't think they have a measurement, a unit of measurement.
They're working on it in that particle accelerator in Switzerland.
Exactly. Yeah, the Hadron Collider. I think that's their key thing to work out that amount of time. I must admit, though, it has improved because I know Hamish will be, as he puts it, early or late.
Yep.
So he'll text me and say, I might be running 10 minutes early or late, which has the impression that it's somehow out of his grasp, but he's always the 10 minutes late. It's like, oh, bad bounce. But I know now to, I think in our early days, yeah, hours, months.
Yeah.
But nowadays, I've got it down to a fine art of when I need to tell him to be somewhere to meet up or when time we're starting. So, yeah, I would say that it's far less these days.
It's like allowing for wind in golf. Is that a thing you do in golf?
it is a thing we do. That's exactly right. Well done. Yeah, exactly. You have to. I've got the same process with my girlfriend. I feel like I was hoping Dan Andrews was doing the same with the COVID restrictions, like telling us all that, the reservation is actually for 8:30 when the dinner reservation is for 9:30, like I do with Beck.
Well, he's kind of done the Hamish, like we could be out a week earlier or we could be out weeks later, and it's always happens to be weeks later.
Yeah, that's true. So I'm hopeful that we get out at the right time. But yeah, it's time management. Yeah. So allowing for the wind. You're pretty good though with your time management, I reckon.
Well, I didn't know you dealt with it with Beck as well, but I deal with it with Bianca, where she's kind of got, like, if something starts at 2, her leaving before 2 is getting there on time. Never, like, distance and traveling time doesn't really come into it.
No,
it's like,
no.
If it could be half an hour away or 10 minutes away or around the corner, it's always like, oh, well, we left before the time it started.
Yeah, yeah. Hamish, Beck and Bianca all think we can teleport places. they have all for some reason got in their head that it's the Jetsons, and it isn't.
It's not.
It's not at all. But yeah, I get that. One time I remember thinking of the Hamish mindset. We were going across town. I picked him up and we're going across town to record something. And we're getting close to the studios, and the record session was at 1, and it was like 6 to 1.
Yep.
When we were just rolling up, and he's like, "Oh man, we're early." I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "Should we go grab a coffee?"
No, you're and allowed, like, to get to things on time.
You're allowed to be on time. I said, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Should we quickly look up a coffee?" I'll look up a coffee shop, and he starts Googling, and I'm like, "Yeah, but there's no coffee shops nearby. You're expecting us to turn around and go and grab something." And yeah, he thought in that 6 minutes there was time to go and do something.
And it's all involved, like the finding a park, parking the car, getting up to the building, finding what building number it is. Like, that's all.
A coffee takes 6 minutes to make. Yeah. That's even before the ordering. Yeah.
So again, if we could teleport straight to the coffee and then teleport straight to the meeting after that, we'd be all right.
We might be all right. Yeah.
Hey, tell me if so it's been now a couple of years since we've been off the radio show, which was on a top 40 radio station. Mm-hmm. Have you just completely lost track of what is cool and relevant and new music now?
Well, yeah. Yeah. But also, I mean, I still put on Spotify. I might put on like the top 40 charts, for
really?
Instance. And today, for instance, I put on the iTunes top 50 just to have a listen to, just to see what's getting around.
Right. And then do you back announce the tracks?
Yeah, yeah. I always leave spots to thank the sponsor. So, just to get the real feel, I'm thanking Video Easy and Blockbuster and, just to really hark back to the glory days of radio. But I would say, I'm pretty much out of touch. I do listen to a lot of radio still, though. I know we were there and you had to listen to every song when you go to the song. It was kind of there. And we'd turn the songs down and the three of us would chat, you, me and Hamish, but it gets ingrained in there somehow.
It subconsciously. Can permeate. Yep.
Yeah, a bit like a Clockwork Orange, I suppose, where they just made them watch terrible things. I think that's the same with pop music if you work in the station. But I still like finding out what people are into, but the hard job now for radio stations is top 40. It's kind of not existing. Like
from streaming now. Aren't they mostly getting it from streaming charts?
Exactly. They get it from streaming charts. But again, I think the want to be an individual is so strong that anything popular is just doomed. But because people want to get off it, like they want to be niche, they want So I think there's many, many cool niche things, but not so much the huge broad thing anymore.
Yeah. And what do you listen to mostly? Like if you're going on a drive or going on a run, what will you listen to?
I love 90s rock and not punk rock, Jack. So don't get excited.
There's probably some crossover in there, though.
There is. So what I've recently been doing is putting on Spoon Man by Soundgarden.
I thought you meant Spoon Man, the guy who used to do mid-dawns on Triple M.
Old Spoony. Yeah, he was. That's a great reference. But yeah, an old presenter. He had a great voice, didn't he? And he'd always do the hard topics at 11 o'clock at night. It was only truckies really giving advice on it. But I put on Soundgarden, Spoon Man, I think up there with the greatest rock song of all time. I know that might be a large call. But and then I'll put on Spoon Man Radio.
Oh, I love that so function.
So whatever Spotify's spitting out at me that is in the realm of Soundgarden and Spoon Man, that's what I'm enjoying. And normally, I mean, you probably might not know all the bands, Jack, but like at the time, it was all this Seattle rock movement with Nirvana and Stone Temple Pilots and Alice in Chains and Soundgarden and Pearl Jam. And so they all kind of come up, and that really is that does it for me.
That's, so, what, how like old were you?
On a flannel net shirt and growing my hair long.
What age were you when that stuff was coming out for the first time? Were you listening to it as it was coming out?
Just, but mainly to keep up with my brother. So I would have been about 12, I reckon, and my brother's 15. Would have been 15, and so he you know, the influence, and I wanted to be my older brother. Probably still do. A lot of people think he's cooler than me. So,
he is very cool hair.
And so, it was those influences. And thankfully, those bands kind of stuck around for a long time. You know, Chili Peppers in there as well. And so, you got to see them grow. And it was about albums, you know. It was a start to finish album situation, which I'm still a huge fan of. I said to you the other day, I text you and Hamish and said, I'm doing a music appreciation night at my house when we're allowed to get back together. And it'll be about albums. It'll be about seeing, like, there were so many great songs on one album, and you had to listen for the journey of it. You had to listen from start to finish. Yeah,
I still listen in albums. I actually, sometimes I do the start radio, like Spoon Man Radio equivalent to that. But otherwise, I find myself choosing albums and playing it through. Even though you don't need to anymore with streaming. But I watched this thing recently, and a guy was saying artists these days don't need to release albums anymore. Albums was made because like it's how many songs fit on vinyl. Then they sort of kept that template when it went to CDs, even though they could fit more on. And now they just don't need to do it. Like you could just release as a song is made, release it out there. And
I remember feeling like bands are up against it, like probably going to die out when we had, I think it was Coldplay on, and Chris Martin was talking about how you give yourself a year to write the songs, then, you know, record and perfect it might be another year, and then you'll tour off that album.
Yeah.
So you generally, it's a 4-year kind of life cycle is what used to be for albums, you know, like... We'd be all hanging out for the next Pearl Jam album or hanging out for the next, you know, whatever album. And then we had Rihanna on the show and she said, oh, yeah, they just send me the songs and wherever I am in the world, whether it's my hotel room, I actually sung one backstage before my concert in the little booth they set up for me. And so at times a song will come out and I haven't even finished my tour and I'm just landing in another city and my new single's already out. And I was like, wow, okay. So they're getting the opportunity to stay relevant and turn around all these singles, these huge pop artists, where the bands have to hope they're still relevant kind of 4 years later, which is tough.
Do you think we'll see bands shifting to that model? Because, I mean, there's no reason a band can't really release a song one at a time. But you're right, you have to get the whole band in the same city, everybody with the equipment into the studio. So it probably makes sense to record more than one song at a time.
Yeah, exactly. It's a much harder process. And also it's a lot more collaborative normally in a band. So you're sitting around, like, I mean, you, Hamish and I, Jack, we would argue for most of our rehearsal time generally about who was the worst in the group. And you, all three of us needed to be together to do that.
Yeah, that's a collaborative effort. It's just a fight. Exactly. If it's one-on-one, that's just a fight. But if there's three-way, it's a triangle, then it's a band working together.
Yeah, and I can't send you my, like, I can't go, hey, Jack, here's my complaints about your approach.
Yeah. Like Rihanna landing in a new city and I'm going like, oh, and I just drop down into a new city and I get off the plane and Andy's insults are right there on the phone waiting for me.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe that's the new thing for us as a band to be able to keep going. We're going to have to send the insults remotely.
And are you guys still recording? Because your band at your brother front, guys used to record at home, right? You had a little setup at home.
Yeah, we're still recording. We're just actually about to release some more songs. But, I mean, it's the songs, most fun.
Multiple. Plural. That's the old school way.
Yeah.
That's too old school, man.
Well, we had an album. We actually have an album. And Cam said, well, should we get this out? And I was like, I don't know.
What's the point?
It felt a bit like that.
That's sad.
And it is sad. But I was like, and so we're like, well, let's release a few at a time and do a gig. To like the other thing was like, it was always nice to do a gig to like launch something.
Yeah.
An album launch is cool. And then the other thing that, like, there are some really cool albums out at the moment, and it might not be your style, Jack, but the Harry Styles album is really strong.
Really? I would only know the Watermelon song, I guess.
Yeah, but he's got some really funky, soulful stuff. And as a journey for a whole album, I'm like, wow, this is like an album you can sit and listen from start to finish. And then, and again, a bit far from punk rock, but Taylor Swift's new album, Folklore, I think it's called, is just a folk album from start to finish.
Yeah, we did listen to that, and I did. That was the first new album I've listened to in a long time.
Yeah, it's a bit of a start to finish journey. So it's nice to see those out, but I don't think people are really aware of them that you're going to sit down and do that. But I mean, I love my 90s rock, but I also love kind of folk music, for love of a better term, but the Bon Ivers of the world. And I was super into Xavier Rudd and Jack Johnson and Ben Harper back in the day.
Yep.
And so, yeah, it was a bit of an eclectic mix.
Yeah, two bands that remind me of you in that ilk is like John Butler, I guess.
Yep,
at one point,
I
you
love
must have.
Butler.
Yeah, that's right. So that was right. And then the other one is Missy Higgins, but maybe that's only because you have her guitar or she played on your guitar.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was the most exciting. Look, one of the funny things about when I started radio is like I wasn't nervous at all when any like of the A-list like movie stars came in.
Yep.
But the first time John Butler came in the studio, I just was so nervous because I wanted to make it him. Yeah. He's probably the person that I was the most nervous to meet just because I loved the music so much.
You started to grow dreadlocks.
I tried to. Always trying to wear bare feet on stage, trying to pretend I'm more earthy than I am when I live in a suburban Melbourne. it was interesting. Like, I loved the music aspect of what we did for the radio, and I missed that about podcasting. But I loved the fact that so many artists came in and you got to interact and see how they went about their work.
Yeah, and I reckon a cool part of what you guys do is like it allows you to become friends with people that you would otherwise just idolize from afar. Like you would have a lot of examples of that in music, and then of course at the Carlton Footy Club as well.
Yeah. So Missy and I became really good pals and talked a lot about music and similar with Vance Joy, and it's really fun to talk about music passionately with someone that you admire so much and hear about how they go about it. I remember one night we'd had a few drinks and we were back at my house after drinks with the actor, one of my mates, Brendan Cowell, and myself and Missy Higgins. And my brother was living with my brother at the time, and it was about 3 o'clock, and Missy pulled out the guitar and starts playing. And my brother the next morning came down and said, was Missy Higgins playing in the living room last night? I said, yeah, she was trying out a few of the new songs. And he's like, I woke up and I couldn't work out whether it was a recording. And then the fact that you guys were stopping and interjecting and discussing, I was like, what? kind of black magic is going on in the living room at the moment?
I guess you could be pausing the CD player and then talking intimately about the track and then pressing play again.
I'm going to try and do that. I'm going to attempt to do that to see whether it can come off. That's a great idea.
Hey, I don't
stop
know.
You there, miss.
I don't know if I told you this or not, but Vance Joy, who you mentioned just a moment ago, played is the frontman of one of the Cool Boys in the Frontman gigs. And yep. I then told Christian O'Connell, whose show I work on now, that I was friends with Vance Joy because we played that gig. And also, once after, not like a couple of weeks after that gig, he saw me in a cafe and he said, "Hey, Jack, how you going?" And he approached me.
Yeah, that's fine. You're fine. Yeah, you're clear there.
But so a year or two has passed and I said, you know, if we ever need Vance Joy on the show, I'm sure he'll do stuff because I'm friends with him sort of. Anyway, I'm leaving the building one day with Christian and Vance Joy's coming in for an interview with a sister radio station, Kiss, which is in the same building.
Yeah.
And I said like, "Oh, Vance, how are you going?" And I could tell the look on his face was like he's recognizing but not 100% sure, and he went for Dave or Dan. He's like, "Yes, Dan, how are you?" I was like, "Oh, it's Jack, but I didn't expect you to remember." But because Christian was with me, now anytime I say somebody is my friend, it just holds no water whatsoever.
It's always a bad thing, isn't it? It's like, yeah, I worry about that a lot. There are times we were obviously Rob Thomas, right, was our front man.
Yep.
And I bumped into him in a hotel in Mexico. And
how random.
It was random. And he walked past and he stopped. And I was like sitting in the pool, right, with a drink, with a beer. And he stopped and he looked at me and he paused and then just went, "Hey," and kind of kept walking. And the pause was, I think I've done something with that guy or I've seen him. But nah, I've given it enough time for my head to work out whether I care or not. And I don't. And walked up. And so I saw him again at lunch. I said, "Hey, just, you know, Rob, I'm Andy," and explained the whole backstory of Cool Boys and worked out that, it takes a long time to explain that. And he was like, what I find interesting about is Rob Thomas was the first person to ever be our front man.
Yeah.
To find out that then we went on a full bus tour.
He wouldn't know the future of the band from that stage.
No, that we get a private jet and we travel around Australia and then we play at Margaret Court Arena in front of, you know, several thousand people. I'm thinking he should know this. He needs to know this. This would be important to him. and it's not. It's not important to Rob. Rob came in once and sung for us as a joke, and that was it. So, yeah, he did endure my long story and said, "That's great, man."
but I'm just might finish my lunch now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? So I always remember about Rob Thomas is we on Gold we play Smooth a lot. Rob Thomas and Santana. And I remember, and I didn't question it until I thought about it recently, but he said, "Oh, that song I did was the biggest song in the world." And at the time, I think we just nodded along. And now I think back to it, I was like, "Ah, interesting. Like, what metric is he using to say that's the biggest song in the world?" He said it with such confidence, like he knows it is.
Well, it probably went number one everywhere. Like, it was huge.
Yeah, but he was saying it is the biggest song in the world, not it was the biggest song in the world.
Oh, did he say is?
Is. Like, he got to the top of the hill.
Rob, you can't have that. You can't. Next time I bump into you in a Mexican hotel, I'm going to have to tell you, mate, it's not the biggest song in the world. Well, I mean, I don't think you can have the biggest song in the world. I think you have to have the biggest song of all time. I think the biggest song in the world is time stamped, if that makes sense.
That's right. What is currently the biggest song in the world?
Yeah. So but maybe he was just saying it. I mean, he should have said was, but it's Smooth. I think there's other songs that are more prevalent than Smooth at the moment.
But we know in TV ratings and radio ratings, you can break them down any way you want to essentially sell any story you want.
Doing that.
So he probably has his version of breaking down Smooth into the biggest song in the world, and it technically makes sense from the stats he's using.
As played by him in his house.
So what would you say, of all the years that we did Cool Boys and the Frontman and all the years, more years that you played with your brother in a real band, what would you say is the major differences of playing in a real band versus a pretend band who only plays one cover a night?
Oh, that's a great question. The major difference is with the real band, you practice.
The fact so that think, that answer surprised me tells a lot about what we do in our band.
So the fact that you practice, not only individually, you go off and work on your own bits, which Hamish has never done, but together you practice, that would be the big difference. And you enjoy practicing. I would say they're the two large differences. Yeah.
And is it hard to remember, like, on stage, song after song after song after song? Because we only have to – I already find it daunting to go, like, oh, I got to remember a whole three-minute songs and all the different parts in it. With the real band, you got to remember song after song.
Yeah, you do. I think, again, it comes back to that practice thing. It's like – you don't ask a footy player, is it hard to remember to kick and handball? I think a lot of it becomes muscle memory from playing a lot.
Yeah, fair enough.
That certainly is different. And also, I think when we go out, if someone makes a mistake in the band, in a real band, You're kind of like, oh, no, that's a shame for that person. In our band, it's, ha, suck it. You're going to wear that. I can't wait. I cannot wait to publicly defame you and insult you about the mistake you made, which, again, is very different to a real band.
Yeah. And was there any stage – I know you played music from, like, a really young age. Was there any stage where you thought that music could be a career for you?
Totally. I wanted to be a musician, and we played some really cool gigs in a band. It's slightly different now, but back in the day, we played some gigs alongside. We played in a festival where it was just us, Jebediah, Grinspoon, Ice House, Eskimo Joe. I don't know how we got included in that.
Well, Ice House is a bit of a stand-up as well. I was going to say, oh, they're all my favourite bands from teenage years, which they were, Jebediah and Grinspoon. But Ice House is a bit of a sore thumb there.
Yeah. It was obviously the Legends. They were the older one. They actually headlined it. And then the band, I couldn't because we had the radio show, but the band supported INXS on their last tour, which was super fun. So we've got to play with INXS all up the East Coast, and Evermore was part of that bill stuff. So
what did they do for the trumpet player while you were gone?
Well, I think they realized that I'm not that prevalent, really. I'm kind of more like the dancing guy in the Mighty Mighty Boston's. You don't need him.
Yeah. It's not like AC/DC touring without Angus Young. It's like they would really miss him.
No. It's nice to have him around for morale, but as far as the overall sound, it's not going to be too big a deal. It was certainly a time. And what was funny was with the radio show, heading back into Sony, obviously to meet up with them and discuss how we can help their artists and different collabs we did with the radio station, I saw our album on a guy's desk.
Oh, really?
When I was in there, and I said, "Oh, wow, that's my band." And he's like, "Oh, right, that's in the R&D pile, so the research and development." So it's nice to think that at least someone had got it and looked at it and then said no. but there was a period there for sure that we really hoped that the band would go off. But it's so hard. Music is so hard.
Yeah.
And look, I would be. It came to a point where I left my brother's band for a while because Hamish and I and you and the radio show was going so strong that you know the work you had to have to put in, particularly for touring bands, that's when you kind of build that support, and I couldn't really be involved in that, so the guys kind of went off and played without me, which made perfect sense.
I guess that's not really happening anymore at record companies, or does it still happen, a version of research and development where a guy's got the CDs all over his desk and he might just by chance pick yours up and put it in a CD player? But I guess it's done differently.
Not as much, yeah. It's, yeah, I've made a couple of good mates who are in R&D, and what was funny was I knew them from our playing music, and then suddenly I saw them a lot because of the radio show.
Yeah.
So there was, you know, we'd invite different research R&D guys from all the labels to come and watch different gigs, and they would. You'd go to live music the whole time and check that out, and made friends with a few of those guys, and they said, yeah, you're in the mix, but it's not, you don't really have a single, we don't have a strong enough single yet. You perform fine. And they were right. Like, we didn't have that radio singles.
Yeah.
But, you know, and whether you agree with this, Jack, it was kind of listenable. It was, you know, you'd listen and go, oh, yeah, that is a
good groove. I loved it, yeah. I used to groove it, yeah. But, yeah, you're right, there's nothing.
You don't.
Yeah, go on.
You don't have that Use Somebody or Sex on Fire that's going to go, oh, cool, this can launch the band.
Yep.
So that was the feedback we got a lot, and that was really fair.
Did you have a point where you went, like, you try and then go home with Cam, your brother, and like, all right, let's write a single. I guess bands write great songs, but they don't mean them to be the single. But you're like, all right, what's really, really catchy?
We started like paying producers to help, you know, like that was the next step for us. And so we had one producer that we were in a songwriting session, and he wrote a chorus, and he's like, that's great. That's really good. Now make that the verse and make an even better chorus.
Wow.
It didn't work. It just sounded like the chorus sounded a bit chorusy, to be honest. But I thought that was profound.
Well, these verses repeat on themselves a lot.
Yeah, with the same lyrics. So, yeah, I mean, absolutely kind of you go for that. But in chatting, going back to your other point about what the R&D guys do, it's a lot of those departments have been shrunk. Because live music has shrunk a little bit.
Yeah.
And in chatting to one of my mates who did move away from it, he just said that it turned into a trawling YouTube job.
Yeah, right.
Rather than going out and seeing live music, it was about finding, because all the people are sitting there uploading themselves singing.
Yeah.
You could just go, you could sit there and just watch and watch and watch YouTube and hopefully be the first person to discover someone. And often, if they've got millions of views, the R&D is done for you. People are already into it. So it changed massively for them.
Yeah. Hey, tell me what you're doing at the moment while you're in, we're in lockdowns in Melbourne still. And it looks like from your Instagram post that you're trying to find different chores to do every day, like put up a new set of shelves.
Yep.
How many sets of shelves can you have in your house?
The house is all shelves now. There's nothing. nothing is on the ground. Couches are on shelves. It's really easy to vacuum. Nothing. It's like the floor is lava.
Yeah.
I think I have done that because all the stuff that you put off for years, I've like, well. And when you're allowed to go and catch up with mates for a beer or go to the footy or play golf, that's a better option than cleaning out your gutters or hanging pictures, etc. So, yeah, slowly working through all of that stuff. And it has kept me mildly sane. I think I'm slightly improved. Not at your standard, Jack, because you build a house with your bare hands like Noah from The Notebook. But I am getting better at tying these things off, and also just getting rid of junk. One sad thing is that obviously we can't donate anything at the moment to the Brotherhood bins or Salvation Army, etc. And so I've got boxes and boxes of things that I plan to be able to take to those or shelters. That just clearing out the clutter, things that you ignore for years. Now that you're only allowed to be in your house. One room, you can walk in there and go, this room sucks and I do have to spend time in here occasionally, so I may as well clean it up.
And do you feel like, I feel like you strike me as a person who would miss having a lot of things to do. You like keeping busy.
Yeah, I do. I really do. So I have slept in longer to make the day shorter, which is so weird. But I know for a guy that does breakfast radio, like I've been, Beck and I have been getting out of bed at 10 or 10.30 just because it's a sad thing, but I've never had this in my entire life that I've wished days away.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I hate the thought of that. Like,
hate the thought of it. Yeah, it's really, it's a shame to feel that.
Yeah.
So we tried to turn it around and go, okay, let's not wish the days away.
Yeah.
But also not get too down. That the first lockdown, I really struggled. I wanted to be busy, and there's projects that we had going and we had momentum and they all get stopped.
Yeah.
And that kind of was a shock to the system. This one, I've kind of realized it's okay to take a little bit of a step back. But yeah, looking forward to being busy again.
Yeah. Tell me what you think of this. Bianca's got us to do chores around the house. She's got us on Slack. Have you heard of Slack before?
Yeah.
It's like a WhatsApp, but for businesses, and she uses it at her work. Now we have a Slack channel called Chores where we list
that
our
is
chores
hysterical.
That we
do. Oh my gosh. You're going to have an HR department. You're using a business tool to allocate things which are meant to be, you know, developing projects and briefs for customers, and you guys are using it to do chores. That's awesome. Look, so the other thing about Slack, if people don't know, and Asana is another one, is you can write down what needs to be done but then allocate it to an employee.
Yep.
And so I just want to know, is Bianca treating you like, do you get an alert saying Jack's chores are these, and is Bianca's list as long? What's the story there?
Yeah, the honest truth is, well, it was her idea. So obviously she's had the idea because somebody in the family isn't living up to their amount of chores. She doesn't go as far as...
You've got to start reallocating your chores to the dog and just going, I can't believe this. This is unbelievable. It's really stacking. I'll tell you what, I'll take a couple more off Luna.
A lot of my ones is dishes, right? Because Bianca's cooking more meals, and whoever cooks, the other one does the dishes. That's fair enough.
Yeah.
We were watching Seinfeld the other day. I don't know if you remember this episode where Jerry has a student cleaner in his house, and he's so impressed with how well the student cleans that he even gets the liquid detergent bottle and clears out the gunk in the cap.
Yeah, great.
That strikes me as the kind of cleanliness that you would keep at your house, keeping the cap of the liquid detergent clear.
Yep, I do. I do the same with the toothpaste. It's a clean nozzle. No, there's nothing. There's no buildup.
So the other day I was getting that same problem where you get the detergent stuck, and first you try and strong arm it and like spray it just with brute force, try and spray it out, and it wasn't working. So I twisted off the top of the Morning Fresh and sucked in a big breath like I was going to close my mouth around it and blow it out.
Yeah.
So I sucked in and then went to blow it out and just went and did a big fart out the other end.
What?
Because the pressure built up in the cap.
Oh my gosh.
And it had to come out somewhere else.
Oh, that is amazing. I wish you'd accidentally sucked in the Morning Fresh and farted out a bubble. Just bubbles at the other side. That's incredible. That's great. Yeah. I must admit, spending more time at home around each other has meant, because do you fart around Bianca often?
I didn't for a long, long time, but now I still feel like it's offensive, but I wouldn't kill myself to not do it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't. I tend not to fart around Beck and vice versa. But similar things have happened. Because we spend so much time around each other, similar things have happened, like bending down to pick up a bunch of books or something. And then we both look at each other as like, are we going to acknowledge that or not? I'm particularly surprised when Beck has done one and you can see her swing around to see whether she's been caught. Yeah. And you go, yep. Don't worry. It's like a scene in a gangster film where the policeman has made friends with the gangster and sees them and just nods them and goes, I'll let this one go.
Yeah. You blame it on like a chair moving. I think it's the chair move. Yeah. And you both know it's not, but you're like, you'll let it slide for this moment.
Absolutely. You realize you could have just going back to the the morning fresh. Just bit of hot water in a cup and just let it soak, man.
Yeah, but I'm trying to get it done in that moment. Like, I need the dishwashing liquid. Yeah, but yeah, I understand that. Do you take a lot of daytime naps? I guess if you're sleeping in, you don't need to.
No, haven't. I'll only daytime nap if I get up early, which is only ever for golf. So I'll come back and have a bit of a daytime nap. But are you napping these days with the radio show?
I wasn't, but now there's not a lot to do during the day. I was trying to go, so wake up at 4:30 and I was trying to go to bed at 9, so still getting a good 7 hours of sleep and yep. not needing to nap during the day. But now there's nothing really to do during the day, like you said. I'll just nap to same thing, like wishing the day away. So I woke up from a nap just before this, but now, like, the problem with naps is like you get so disorientated now, and I wake up so thirsty. I was like, oh no, I gotta interview Andy after this, like parched, trying to suck down all this water. So I'm gonna drift away from naps over the next couple of weeks as we hopefully move into being able to do stuff again.
Well, Hamish and I had a race to sleep, if you knew you were there, obviously, in New York when we went to the NYU, New York City University. And because they have a department of sleep, and there's not many universities in the world that have a department of sleep. And the guy was saying that if you aren't getting the right amount of sleep, it goes into a sleep bank, and it's how we've evolved over time, but it stems from like caveman days where if you're on the run and you couldn't sleep, your body doesn't let you. You're like, if there's a big mammoth chasing you or something, you keep running and you don't stop. And so you could do that for days, or you can be on alert and have it. But when you found your sanctuary, you went through a crack that's too thin for the mammoth or something, and you got to the other side, you would then rest. And once you go into that state of rest, as in past the usual amount you were getting, your body starts paying back the bank of sleep that you were taking out the credit, right? And it wants to pay, your body wants to pay it back all in one go. So that's the idea of being disorientated. And people, when people say you've overslept, apparently, according to this professor, you can't oversleep. What happens is, if you've been undersleeping, I say 2 hours a night for two weeks, you're sitting there and you're owed the 28 hours back, and your body wants to try and take the full thing. It doesn't take partial payments. It wants to take the full payment back in one.
Yeah.
And so you go to sleep, and then you find yourself waking up feeling really groggy and terrible. It's because you're still in the moment where the bank's meant to be paying back the whole thing in full.
Well, you told me that after the gap years, say when we were on the road for gap years, there was a lot of like filming and traveling, so you don't get a proper 8 hours sleep a night. And then you would get home and do like 16 hours of sleep every night after we landed back in Australia.
Yeah, it was after Caravan and Carriage in the gap years, as soon as we'd finished, I'd normally have 16, 14, 14, and then be fine.
Yeah. The next step is hibernating.
Yeah, but it was really bizarre. It kind of proved how much we were on the run. But every time it was like, you know, I get back and it was just basically 8 waking hours a day for 3 days in a row, and then I'd be feeling great again. But yeah, it's a strange old thing.
Now, tell me, one thing I want to ask you about, because Christian and I were talking about this week, teachers, and your dad was a primary school teacher, or still is a primary school teacher.
Yep, still is. I think he should retire. He's he's 74, I think, but he still loves it. Maybe as an excuse to get away from mum.
So how's he going with the new world, the whole new world, having to do the Zoom classes?
So my dad, when I say teacher, he does read and recovery. So, and which is where it's a great spot for retired teachers to kind of ease back. It's like the desk job for the detective,
for the cop.
for the cop. So essentially it's one-on-one tutorials. The dad's public school teacher, primary school. And any kid that's falling behind, They've got a thing called reading recovery, which is they found out that kids are often falling behind because they're too scared to try for fear of not being good at it. And when you're in a class of 30, it's pretty easy to go under the radar and not try.
Yeah.
So if a kid's falling behind, they go to one-on-one tutorials with my dad, and he'll have a number of those a day where he sits there and they practice their reading and gets the reading up to scratch. And the idea being they do that for a whole year, and they generally go back into the classroom one of the better readers just because of that one-on-one time. So dad does read and recovery.
Oh, good on him.
I don't think he's been doing any over Zoom as such. I think he's just kind of used the time to chill out and annoy mum.
And was he your teacher at any stage? Were you the kid at school whose dad was a teacher at the school?
We had a composite, like a joint class for grade prep. It was one huge class and two teachers, which is kind of weird.
Really?
And by dad, so I was, yeah.
What? So they would go one for one up at the blackboard. How do they split up their time?
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, they would basically, from what I can remember, because I was just a kid, they would just kind of take it in turns or do group classes. Like they would read a book and do different voices together, or we did a lot of the spy things. I don't know why Dad loved this, but he made us all spies in grade prep, and we would head out, and while another class was at PE, we'd go out and steal all their chairs and write a ransom note on the blackboard. And,
oh, that's and so Dad cool.
And Dad got in trouble for that.
They're not actually learning anything.
Dad and Mrs. S, this other teacher who's a ripper as well, the whole thing was – so everyone had their spy number, their cards. We'd make up our own identifications, our fake names, and that was a lot of the teaching. And I'm not sure. I heard that, you know, in my later years that there was certain people and principals, et cetera, that didn't quite like the method.
Yeah.
But it was heaps of fun. So I kind of wasn't directly in his class, but I was in the same class.
Yeah.
One thing I do remember though, Jack, was there was a metal plate in the middle of the room. It was a huge room, which would have a PowerPoint in there so you could plug in the projector.
Yep.
Right. And if you were in trouble, you had to go sit on the metal plate. Right. And this girl got in trouble, and her name's Fiona, and she got in trouble and she sat on the plate, right?
Yeah.
And my dad said, you're not allowed to leave the plate until after the whole of recess, but yeah, Everyone else is heading out. We all came back in from recess and there was a poo on the plate and the girl was nowhere to be seen. So she'd taken it literally that she wasn't allowed to leave the plate, obviously.
He scared her straight.
Dad was horrified. He's like, oh my God, I've told this girl that she's not allowed to leave the plate and she's done a poo on the plate.
Or as a message for your dad. And she did know full well what she was doing.
That's a better way to think about it, isn't it? Yeah? You want me to sit on the plate? You can suck on this.
Well, you might have the question I was going to with teachers, you might have already answered with the spy stuff, but I was trying to think of like the coolest thing a teacher ever did for us. And the one for me was we had a teacher in grade one called Miss T, and she took everybody in the class, walked them down to 7-Eleven and bought everybody a Slurpee. And it became like folklore throughout the school. And years later, people were like, were you in Miss T's class when she took us to all get Slurpees? What is the coolest thing you remember a teacher doing?
We got to do that with, I think the Slurp, maybe, oh, actually, I would have been older than you. I was going to say, maybe this guy stole it from Mrs. T. But we did a Slurpee. We had to all walk to 7-Eleven, but we all had to hold a rope. Did you ever do that?
No, we had to walk in pairs.
When you're walking in public, you all had to hold a rope. So, like, it looks like, you know, some sailors are off. But it was one way to make sure that no one could run off, you know, or get, you know, get run onto the road or anything, because if everyone's holding the rope, that's the way to do it. But, I really loved the spy stuff, et cetera. But the one that took the cake was Mr. Wyatt in year 8. I'm not sure if you had in the science labs the Bunsen burners, and there was a hole in the desk where the pipe for the Bunsen burner would come up. Did you guys have holes in the desk?
Yep. Yeah.
So ours were kind of double desks. So you'd face the other person across from you as they did their Bunsen burning, etc. We invented this game where you had to flick a 20-cent piece, slide it across into the hole.
Right, yeah.
And it was a great game, and we'd spend a lot of time not working and playing the game. And Mr. White knew that there was no chance that this wasn't going to happen. So we came in one day, and on the board, he had built a round robin, a full knockout championship.
Love this.
Like all across the whole board, and the champion on the side, and had $10 for the tuck shop at the end. And he said, guys, we're not going to do any work today. We're having the championship.
Put your Bunsen burners away.
Yes. But if you guys, we can do this once a month, last Friday of every month, if you don't play the game for the whole month. And everyone's like, awesome.
Yeah.
We'll take that deal.
Definitely.
And so once a month, we got to play this huge round robin knockout championship. But and then the rest of the time, we used the Bunsen burners appropriately.
He would have been a legend of the school. Like that is.
It was awesome.
I think of now being a teacher, like if I went to do it now, it'd be like, how many hacks can I do to make the kids love me like Mr. White did in that science class?
Yeah, exactly. You need that. You need that stuff. I guess it's if you can't beat them, join them. Yeah. I think that was what he was thinking. And and look, we're all better for it.
All right, Andy. Well, I've kept you longer than I said I would. Thank you for being on Jackie Road Studios.
Mate, I can't wait. Can't wait to hear what you come up with.
Andy Lee, as strong as can be, in Jackie Road Studios. I got a great song inspired by Andy's chat coming up. I'm super happy with it. My idea, if I didn't leave it to the last minute like I did and always do, I would have asked Andy to play a trumpet solo during the song. Instead, I've done a mini guitar solo, but maybe when I release the album at the end of the year, I'm taking all the songs from Jackie Road Studios and putting them out as an album. Maybe on the album version, Andy will come back on the trumpet. It's just guitar on this week's song. Not too unlike the guitar you can win at the end of the Jackie Road Studios series number one, the world's fastest guitar, the RS720B. The legends at Yamaha sent the show a guitar, blah, 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 blah. You could win the guitar just by getting involved in the talking points each week.
Talking points, oh, what are you talking points?
Email me at jackierodestudios@gmail.com. The email link is also in the show notes. The first talking point this week.
Talking points, oh, what are you talking points?
Have you embarrassed yourself in front of a celebrity like Andy did with Rob Thomas, like I did even more with Vance Joy? I can still see his face the moment he called me Dan. I shouldn't have been so eager to tell people Vance Joy was my friend. Have you embarrassed yourself in front of a celebrity? JackieRedStudios@gmail.com.
Talking points, oh, what are you talking points?
And the second talking point this week is celebrating cool teachers. Probably teachers you grew up with, although if you are a cool teacher, by all means, nominate yourself, JackieRoadStudios@gmail.com. What was the coolest thing a teacher ever did at your school? Were you in that class or was it in somebody else's class? Miss T from grade one, Elphington Primary School. I have no idea if you would even remember who I am. But thank you, if you ever hear this, for taking us all down to get Slurpees one summer. No other class got to do it. I never heard of it happening ever again in years before me or years after me.
It was the coolest thing a teacher ever did. What is the coolest thing a teacher ever did at your school? JackieRoadStudios@gmail.com.
Talking points, oh, what are you talking points?
This song, which you can already find on YouTube, but usually hits the streaming services by Friday after the episode's released, is inspired by this part of my chat with Andy.
I mean, I still put on Spotify. I might put on like the top 40 charts, for
really?
Instance. And today, for instance, I put on the iTunes top 50 just to have a listen to, just to see what's getting around.
Right. And then do you back announce the tracks?
Yeah, yeah. I always leave spots to thank the sponsor.
So this week's song chronicles the story of a radio veteran who's left the game but can't give away his inherent skills and abilities to broadcast on radio. This is not a story about Andy. It's just a generic radio veteran. It's called Thanks for Tuning In. This is Jackie Road Studios.
This is a story of a former glory, a radio DJ who doesn't play the songs no more. He no longer broadcasts, but everyone he walks past, he'll tell the time it's 10 to 9 and does the weather forecast. Thanks for tuning in. Now he's driving and he's streaming top 40 hits and talking in the bits between them. That's the new one from Ed Sheeran. He back announced the track despite the fact no one could hear him. He doesn't seem to care, he's not on air, he's not aware the show he's on has come and gone. He's throwing to another song that nobody will hear and nobody will care. He says thanks for tuning in, but nobody's there. Yeah, in the morning he'll just start talking, gives out his own phone number, wonders why nobody's calling. He's got prize giveaways to improve his ratings. He played Beat the Bomb against his mum and she won all his savings. He doesn't seem to care, he's not on air, he's not aware the show he's on has come and gone. There's no point playing Beat the Bomb when nobody will hear and nobody will care. Says thanks for tuning in, but nobody's there. If a radio DJ speaks in the woods and nobody's around to hear what he says, does he make a sound? Does he make a sound? Does he even exist? And now he's shopping, he's buying sneakers. Elton John comes on, his song is playing through the speakers. He tells the staff, it's my pleasure to put the classics on, and it's all thanks to the Nissan Navara-thon. He doesn't seem to care, he's not on air, he's not aware the show he's on has come and gone. There's no Nissan Navara-thon and nobody will hear and nobody will care. He says thanks for tuning in, but nobody's there.